Good morning with KUAC Local News. I'm Robin. On the same day, the American Lung Association released its State of the Air report, and the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, the state implementation plan for clean air. Fairbanks and the interior are at the center of both. The Lung Association gave Fairbanks a grade of F because of our heavy particle pollution in the winter. 14 of the 25 cities most polluted year-round by particle pollution improved over the levels of the 2018 report, including Fairbanks. The association changed Fairbanks in the ranking from number one most polluted to the third most polluted American city behind Bakersfield and Fresno, California. The Matanuska-Susitna borough also was graded an F, and Juneau and Anchorage both got a B. The Alaska Department of Conservation will release a draft Serious State Implementation Plan, or SIP, for the Fairbanks North Star Borough Fine Particulate Matter PM2.5 non-attainment area. DEC, in partnership with the Fairbanks North Star Borough, will hold meetings with stakeholders and members of the public in Fairbanks in May to present the draft plan and answer questions. The SIP is a requirement of the Environmental Protection Agency to bring the borough's fine particulate matter non-attainment area into compliance with the Federal Clean Air Act and reduce the health effects of poor air quality on residents. Wood smoke from home heating in the winter, coupled with temperature inversions and other natural conditions, is the main contributor to the poor air quality in the non-attainment area. On Tuesday, May 14th, they will present the draft at the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce Weekly Business Luncheon at the Carlson Center. Then Thursday evening, May 16th, there will be a joint work session of the Borough Assembly and the state's Air Pollution Control Commission at the Borough Assembly Chambers. In late June, formal public hearings will be held on the SIP and regulation proposal during the comment period. Borough Mayor Bryce Ward wants people who burn wood or coal and people with respiratory and other health problems to come to the events and comment on the SIP.
So folks have asked, what difference does it make if I come in and provide comment? It makes a huge difference, because if there is a large outpouring of comments, either in support of a piece of regulation or against a piece of regulation, it can make the difference to whether or not it stays in the ultimate plan package or not.
Ward says DEC has been working with a report from the borough's air quality stakeholders group, which included wood burners and health experts who met several times to come up with recommendations on cleaning the air. He gave an example of how those recommendations, like converting to ultra-low sulfur fuel that people use to heat their homes, might impact the SIP.
And some of those things have drastic impacts on the cost of energy. So for instance, the difference between number one and number two heating oil may be a few cents a gallon versus the difference between number two and ULSD, which is upwards of 60 or 70 cents a gallon. And so if it came out that the recommendation was to do something like go to ULSD, the impacts to the community would be very, very large and may actually drive folks into burning more wood. And so those are the kind of comments that are needed in order to give direction on whether or not the measures that have been spelled out in the Serious SIP make sense. And that's part of why it's important for folks to stay engaged and then provide comment once it's that time is open.
Additions or updates to proposed events will be posted on the DEC Air Quality website. In the spirit of Earth Week, an event tonight will examine how Alaska might be affected by policies of the Green New Deal. A coalition of community organizations and academics is hosting a teach-in in Fairbanks on the UAF campus. Tristan Glava with the Fairbanks Climate Action Coalition says the proposal for changes in federal legislation to support renewable energy projects will have a positive impact globally.
During this week of Earth Day, it seemed really fitting that we focused on the Green New Deal as one of the most, exciting proposals for environmental action now, one that can make our lives and our communities happier, healthier, and more prosperous.
He says, like the first Earth Day grassroots teaching events, a number of speakers will show ways to address the climate crisis with a transition in the economy.
Princess Dajrai Johnson is going to be speaking to social justice and social equality and indigenous rights. Professor Alex Hirsch is going to be talking about the political economy. And Bruno Gruno is going to be talking about the renewable energy and housing aspects. Throughout all of that, we're going to be seeing in what ways do the intentions of the Green New Deal really fit into the issues that we're facing here in Alaska and throughout the Arctic.
The event is called Green New Deal Teach-In, a framework for transition. It is tonight from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Scheivel Auditorium on the UAF campus. Two tribes say Governor Mike Dunleavy and his administration aren't doing enough to consult with their leaders on big issues facing the state. The previous administration made it state policy to consult with tribal entities on a government-to-government basis, and it's standard practice at the federal level. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Christy Schallenberger reports Dunleavy acknowledges the policy, but he's unclear about how it would apply.
The Rutchikahamut Native Council in Bethel sent letters to three state agencies asking for government-to-government consultation on the permitting process for the proposed Donlin Gold Mine. The agency commissioners, all appointed by Governor Mike Dunleavy, said no.
I was shocked and dismayed, I couldn't believe they were denying our request, and it was like another shutdown to our voices.
That's Mary Mathias, ONC's Natural Resource Director. In a letter to ONC, the commissioners say they want to treat all Alaskans fairly. In this case, they say government-to-government consultation is a federal process and not applicable to state permitting. The Dunleavy administration also refused to consult with the Chilkat Indian villages over the proposed Palmer Project, a mineral exploration effort. In a press conference earlier this week, Dunleavy says he's willing to use the government-to-government process only if it leads to a, quote, absolute outcome.
Then my wife and my children are tribal members. I have a lot of friends who are tribal members. We're going to be sitting down with various stakeholder groups associated with rural Alaska and Native Alaska. And we want to have genuine conversations, though, that move us from point A to point B. We just don't want to have conversations just for the sake of conversations.
Alaska Native tribes are a form of government that's recognized at the federal level as having sovereignty over certain matters. But Alaska, like many states, is sometimes reluctant to accept tribal authority. Then, in 2018, Governor Bill Walker issued an administrative order saying the state must deal with tribes on a government-to-government basis when tackling issues that impact them. That order has not been rescinded by the Dunleavy administration. Walker's administrative order is one step in a decades-long debate over tribal sovereignty in Alaska. Matthew Newman is a staff attorney for the Native American Rights Fund.
Alaska as a state government and its approach to tribal sovereignty, really, unfortunately, it breaks down to political choices by past governors and past legislators or legislatures.
In the 1990s, the Department of Interior formally recognized Alaska Native tribes. Newman says several court decisions have recognized tribal jurisdiction in Alaska as well.
The universal answer that comes back every time is no. Alaska tribes are indeed tribal sovereigns in the same sense that the Navajo Nation, the Cherokee Nation, or any other tribal nation in the lower 48 is a tribe.
But tribal sovereignty is not enshrined in state law or the Alaska Constitution. That leaves a lot of uncertainty over how the state will interact with tribes. And the political whiplash makes it harder for tribes to address problems and move forward with solutions. Kendra Kloster is the executive director with the nonprofit group Native Peoples Action and a member of the Tlingit and Haida tribe. She says every time a new governor steps into office, tribes must play defense.
We're constantly defending and trying to make people understand that, you know, Alaska Natives have been here, we've been stewards of this land. You know, every 4 years we might have to be doing that same education part of it.
Kloster says government-to-government consultation should be standard in Alaska, especially when dealing with major projects like the proposed Donlin Gold Mine. Dunleavy has repeatedly said he understands rural Alaska issues, including tribal sovereignty. Kloster says that just because Dunleavy's wife and daughters are Alaska Native tribal members, that doesn't give him buy-in with the community or an automatic understanding of how tribal government works.
I feel like really he's been using his wife of saying that we have, that I understand rural Alaska, I understand Alaska Natives, but clearly he does not, or he's not listening. He's not responding to people. He's not taking meetings. He's refusing to work with tribes, and so this is very concerning.
Back in Bethel, ONC says their letter shows that they and Dunleavy want the same thing, an absolute outcome. But in this case, the desirable outcomes differ. ONC doesn't want the proposed gold mine, and Dunleavy supports it. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Christy Schellenberger in Bethel.
In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.